Now, there's some people in the world that just make you sick. Brad Johnson's one of those. Not because of the fact he played 380 games and was a 15-time All-Australian, all that sort of stuff, and one of the great smiling faces on the planet. But he's down the line on Zoom today. He's got sun absolutely bursting through the window. So his world is magnificent. He's allowed to play golf. He's out cafeing and restauranting and winering with his family across the weekend because he lives outside of metropolitan Melbourne. And he just makes me sick. Good morning, Jono.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. Good morning, everyone. Yes, Half, it's meant to be pretty cold for the next few days, but at the moment I'm sitting here and the sun is just beaming in. It's nice out in Geelong at the moment, I must admit. And moving here nearly 10 years ago is now a good decision with the things we can do at the minute. No, but look, not rubbing it in at all because we understand that, you know, it has been tough the this period of time, but hopefully we can all step out very shortly. And yeah, we had that luxury. My daughter was 18 on Tuesday, so we were able to sort of step out as a family and celebrate that with her rather than just doing it at home. So yeah, we've had those couple of luxuries present to us because of where we sit in terms of the virus at the moment.
You did a pretty good job of rubbing it in during the news, Brad.
You're the one who brought up the fact that I'm sitting here in sunshine.
I can't see you.
Between us now, it's public. Yes, I did rub it in a little bit because I do love my golf. I really do. And I love sort of just being able to get out and about as everyone does. So here we are now in Geelong. We're able to do that. So it's nice at the minute, Half.
Good for you. Good for you, John. I'm pleased for you and your people and your family and all that sort of stuff down there. Just don't mention it again.
No, I won't. That's it. I feel bad for doing it now, so that's it. Never again.
No, don't feel bad. Good luck to you. This is what we say around here. Now, Liz, there's a fair bit happening in the world of footy, John, and it's a big night just before we get too deep into the proceedings and the topics for today. That big night for your footy channel, Fox Footy, tonight because it's awards season.
Jam-packed, Half, as they say. It is jam-packed tonight with the All-Australian, the NAB Rising Star, the MVP, and the Coaches Award as well. So, yeah, you're right. It's going to be absolutely huge tonight on Fox. I think they've allocated an hour and a half. It might go for about 3.5, I think, with all of that. It's going to be great. It really is. And Sarah Jones will do a great job leading from the front, like she normally does throughout the throughout this time of year, all year in fact, but in particular the award seasons. So we'll all be involved in some way and helping present, you know, these big awards for the individual players from teams that have had great years. And that's what the bonus comes from. You have a good year in a team and you stand out, you get recognised for that. And tonight's an opportunity to recognise the best players in the competition.
As part of your six All-Australians, did you get six Blazers and where are they?
I've got six ashtrays, so was a little, it was sort of like a round sort of ashtray-looking trophy, I suppose, right, is what we used to get. We never got the Blazers. Maybe they go back now and fit us all out for Blazers just so we're consistent with what the boys get. So I don't mind the Blazer. I think it looks pretty sharp for what they get. And so, yeah, we got a trophy back in the day, so they sit in the house somewhere, Half. I'm not too sure. I've got too many things up and about now, Half. I used to just have it all, you know, decked out, big rooms and all that sort of stuff. You know, all my memorabilia up and couldn't go past without stepping into the room, you know, just to admire the work. But not anymore. I'm past that.
How many times did you play for Victoria, John? Are you?
I think it was three. So I was right at the tail end of it. Half and I were at the tail end of playing state footy. So we played in SA, Half, I think it was. We had a big win over there against Adelaide. And then we had one game against the Allies and then one to finish at the MCG against South Australia. That was the final State of Origin game.
So for you, now, admittedly, it's different because you actually played as opposed to an All-Australian situation. But where does representing Victoria compared to being named as an All-Australian?
Oh, look, it was huge to be named and recognised. It comes back to, you know, the team's going really well. You're having an impact within that team and therefore you get sort of recognised from an All-Australian point of view. It's a fantastic honour. Representing your state, though, when we were coming through and Half and I played, you know, Till Cup together back in 1993, a long time ago. But we did, and we travelled through South Australia to do that, and to grow up to represent your state was the biggest thing. Like, that was the pinnacle. Like, we would rush home from school to watch Victoria play West Australia or South Australia. Like, that was the ultimate thing to be able to achieve. So then to represent Victoria was just a huge honour. So it probably sits, above that. But then we got the opportunity to, with being named in the All-Australian team, to go and travel and play some international rules and play with the best players in the country, not just your state, but all around the country. And that was huge for my football development. Half can talk on his own, but rooming with Mark Rusciuto, in my first international rules tour, I roomed for Victoria. My first roommate was Gavin Brown. You know what I mean? So, like, you learn so much from these guys, and you look at players today that had the opportunity last year, and Lockie Weller was one that, for me, that really stood up, I think, this year after being part of a state squad last year. Like, just to be around the best and learn from them, and you really do, you admire the older ones that you're with, like Robert Harvey and Steve Silvani and Craig Bradley, these guys that looked up to as a player, that you learnt so much from being around them in terms of their training habits and those sort of things. I remember Mark Rusciuto, guys, grabbed me the day we walked in. I was a bit nervous with the big fella, and he took his top off and he had the big tat in the back, and I was really nervous. He goes, "All right, Jono, we're going to do some weights." I went, "Yep, all right, Mark, we're going to do some weights." So, but they're the sort of guys that, we just landed in Ireland, and he was like, super motivated to continue on and just be a better player. And you can see that from the way that they prepare and approach things. And, you jump on board with these guys. They're certainly fantastic to be around.
See, I have a theory, and I talked about this with Half earlier, that if you're going to name an All-Australian team, they're not going to play. That's just the reality of the situation. Why wouldn't you name a State of Origin team each year in each state? And I reckon, particularly in these times, I'd take it a step further and say, okay, if you are named in the State of Origin team, then the team that you grew up playing for, so your junior club, gets a grant from the AFL to help, potentially get them back on track after what we've gone through this year with no grassroots footy at all. So, what was your junior footy team growing up?
Yeah, so Hoppers Crossing was my junior team. And I think the junior team, I don't know whether it still happens today. I think back in the past, if you played first game, 50 games, 100 games, something like that, maybe the junior club back in the day used to get a little kick for that sort of thing as a show of appreciation. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened. I'm not sure how it sits today, but I think that's a great idea, Whitey. And you can really do some good community-based promotion around that. You know what I mean? The player, you get some good stories of the player going back to the club. We know how good, that these stories are put together these days as well. So I think that's an excellent idea to give some money back that way. And you might even be able to put aspects back through certain charities as well in terms of, the major ones within the States. EJ Witten Foundation comes to mind straight away with the big V aspect of things. So you could do certain things that I agree with, that we could still recognise the best players in the state at that period, and then whether they can hold on and become part of the All-Australian team at the end of the year, I think creates a really good talking point, because you'll have, 20 guys from each state getting identified in their state team, and then of those, which ones go on, which ones fall away,
exactly.
which players weren't in that all of a sudden jump up to get in an All-Australian team. So you could create some really good discussion around those sort of teams as well, although it would be virtually like we all are today. I think that's fine. I think it's a big great talking point, as long as some aspect of it went back to the clubs. I think that's a great idea.
All right, so back to what will happen tonight. I'll ask both of you, who wins the Rising Star, or who should win it? Or I know Huff's not, and we're a bit the same. We don't really care, but who, as in debating it. But who do you think deserves it based on what's happened over the course of the season?
I think Caleb Sarong deserves to win the Rising Star. Watching him, I've probably seen him 10 or 12 times now this year, and he's been just absolutely sensational in terms of stepping into a young midfield at Fremantle, I should say, and really leading from the front in terms of that. His work around the ball is excellent. He links up really well. He gets back on the 45. His movement and positioning on the ground is absolutely first class. So, the fact that himself, Brayshaw, and Chera in some ways have really enabled that midfield at Fremantle to grow some depth this year, I think is really good with Fife and Walters and Mundy, the superstars that can get it in and out of there and play a bit forward as well. But even at the end of the year, Michael Walters spent all his time forward because Longmuir was confident in what these younger guys were doing and trying to give them more opportunity as well as the season went on and fatigue started to set in. So Caleb Sarong, just in front of Noah Anderson, whose second half of the year has been very, very good. Statistically, he's been excellent. He's sort of, you know, starting to average around that sort of 18 to 22 possessions per week. You can see that he started to feel more comfortable in around the contest, accepting the hits, making the hits himself. So I think he'll probably, you know, flow in second, but I think it's Caleb Sarong's.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, Jono. I think he's the standout. He's one of the most complete young players I reckon we've seen. Now, Sam Walsh, obviously, last year stands out from recent crops about impact and a rounded game. But I think he's fantastic, Caleb Sarong. You'd be picking him for the State of Origin team. Why? I mean, he's in that sort of level. He's had a fantastic year. So I think he's the winner of that. Pretty straightforward. Ahead of, you said Noah Anderson. Ahead of, I don't know who he's ahead of. Must admit, outside of him.
Do you think Matt Rowell will get a vote, Harp?
Would you give him one
down the bottom, or you wouldn't worry about it because he's not going to win it?
Yeah, I actually hope not. Now, not because I don't want him to win. I think he's a fabulous young player. But I don't think a three-game sample size is enough to warrant a vote in a rising star. That's just my take. I know there's other people who think he should win it because of the way he played in those three games, the impact he had on not only the Gold Coast Suns, but the competition. I just don't think, philosophically, it's a big enough sample size to be getting a vote.
Yeah, he should get votes for City standing next to Stuart Dew for the entire season.
That's right.
He should get 3 votes for that. That's been a magnificent effort from Matt Rowell.
He should get some votes in the Assistant Coach of the Year award or something like that.
Coaching votes.
I think the interesting thing is, and this is sort of gets this conversation on to potentially more around North Melbourne and Ben Brown, but what Fremantle did in the draft last year, so they had 3 picks inside 10. They had 7, 8, and 9. They've gone and got Hayden Young at 7. Now, we saw a small sample of him before he got injured. Looks a really classy sort of outside half-back type. Caleb Sarong, and then Liam Henry. So 3 different sorts of players, but 3 that clearly all can play. But when you've got Sarong, who's a cake player half, not an icing player, when you've got Sarong, Chera, and Brayshaw that they've drafted with high picks, you know, over the last 2 or 3 years, it just shows how quickly you can bounce back if you get your early picks right, which is what Fremantle seems to have been able to do.
And the pleasing thing with those players you've mentioned, especially Brayshaw and Chera, because there was a moment earlier on in the season where they were being questioned, especially even the media was sort of starting to question, where's Brayshaw at? Where's Chera at? What their performance levels aren't at the, you know, just aren't really consistently where they should be. And it's like from that moment there, these two players took it upon themselves to turn their own form around, and that in turn turned the fortunes of Fremantle around, no doubt, in the way that they play, especially around the ball and starting to drive it forward more often. Matt Tabanar is a better player this year because of what Chera, Brayshaw, Sarong bring to that midfield of Fremantle, because they got better ball going forward, they got more fluency in the way that they did bring the ball forward, their scoring did go up a little bit. But Tabanar was involved more often because of that, rather than having to get up the ground and then try and get back. And it was just too difficult for them to do it with slow ball movement. So that's the reason why others within that Fremantle lineup have really been able to stand up, because of what the growth in the midfield has been able to achieve.
Yeah, interesting.
So the MVP and the will be Lucky Neil. We all think that will happen, Jono. That'll be Lucky Neil's.
Yeah, I think so. Travis Boak will be thereabouts. I think we forget Travis Boak. He's had a sensational year. I know Ollie Wines' second half of the year has been very, very good, and he's been able to match the output of what Travis Boak has done. But yeah, I'd sort of just have him there as a bit of a sneaky.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. We never forget him around here. I think Whitey might have just invested in some Brownlow action. We're just not quite sure. Not quite sure, Trav.
With Travis?
Yes.
No, last year.
Last year.
I had I had Fife and Boak, but I really thought Boak was Gator. He just didn't get recognised the way he should have been. I mean, he didn't even get in the Australian team last year. He was just as good last year as he has been this year. Anyway, now, the Ben Brown situation. I want to talk about the Ben Brown situation, Jono, because I'm going to give you some numbers first and then ask you to have a view on what's taken place in the last 24 hours or so.
Strap yourself in, Jono.
Yeah. So, Ben Brown comparing with the best key forwards in the competition over the last 4 years. So I'm going to count this year because I think it's important you don't just skew the stats to suit your argument. Let's just go from the last 4 years. And in the last 4 years, Ben Brown sits third on goal average over the last 4 years. So Franklin is number one with 2.96 goals a game. Josh Kennedy is second with 2.7. Ben Brown third, 2.61, Hawkins 2.46, and Cameron 2.45. So that's the top five when it comes to goal average over the last 4 years. Then when we go, and I think this is a really important stat, efficiency rate or accuracy when it comes to kicking a goal, and Ben Brown sits second. So Jack Darling is number one at 69.1%, Ben Brown 67.4%, Hawkins 65.1%, Tom Lynch 64.6%, and then Jack Riewoldt 63.3%. So in two key categories, Ben Brown stacks up with all the best key forwards in the competition, yet North Melbourne don't want him.
Yeah, they're good numbers. They're impressive numbers as well when you look at that over a body of work. And I think it does come on the back of it did fall away a fair bit for Ben Brown this year, and you could see that physically with him. So whether he had ailments before he had the major injury, I'm sort of saying in terms of that form, or whether it was just a form slump, it just seemed that, look, I go back to last year, and he was struggling at the start of last year in some ways, and then Reece Shaw took over as coach, and they changed their ball movement, which then helped Ben Brown come back and play some really good footy in the back half of last year. So, and Ben Brown is a leading key forward. He's a big guy who loves to come at the football. Now, this year, North Melbourne, they lost some key players through the midfield. Their ball movement wasn't as fluent. Therefore, it was a lot harder for Ben Brown because the opposition were able to get back and restrict the holes that Ben Brown would normally lead into with better ball movement. He's not your crash and bash key forward like your Dixon or your one-on-one like Hawkins. Or, you know, even the King boys where they can crash a pack, agility, get going, turn and kick it. Once the ball hit the ground this year, it just looked like Ben Brown was out of the contest completely. And then he came back and didn't give himself a chance to recapture any form because of the injury. So it's just turned into one of those just, you know, unfortunate years for Ben Brown where, you know, from reports, he had the contract on the table, turned that down. And, you know, you look back now and sometimes you just, when a club, you know, comes to you and offers you a reasonable deal, it might be worth taking it instead of, you know, holding out. And then you sort of, you then look at what he's been able to do post that. And it hasn't been, you know, great this year. And sometimes it can end quickly as well for your Whitey. But I think Ben Brown still has something to offer. No question. It's just, it's going to have to be the right sort of team that has quicker ball movement than a team that is slow and methodical, because I don't think Ben Brown will have the impact any, especially when the ball hits the deck. Mark Lead, fantastic. But when it hit the ground, he was very quickly out of the contest with the opposition clearing his area.
Yeah, none of this makes any sense to us. I know this whole Ben Brown thing. Further to those numbers, Whitey, I've got some more for you from the Swamp Man on Twitter. A player to kick five or more goals since the start of 2017, the last 4 years. Jack Riewoldt, Tom Lynch have done it six times. Buddy's done it seven times. Tom Hawkins has done it eight times. Jeremy Cameron's done it nine times. Josh Kennedy's done it 10 times. Ben Brown has done it 12 times. So he's a match winner. Like, and think about five goals in modern footy. It's 15 back in the old days.
Yeah, and I think that's the key to this for me, is that in a lot of ways, he's a very unconventional player. In a lot of ways, he's an unconventional person. But goals are goals. And you know, what Half's just mentioned, and I talked before about accuracy rate, that can't be taken away from him. So I just think that he's got to find a club, John, I agree with, who suits the way that Ben Brown plays, to, you know, Ben Brown's strengths. And there's more than one or two teams that play that way. He can make a team a lot better. And you've got to focus on what he can do, not what he can't do, I think. And I think that's where North Melbourne may be focusing on at the moment because of the way that they want to play their footy moving forward.
Yeah, it's a really good point because we do. We tend to focus a little bit on those sort of things. And I was asked earlier in the year, in terms of his form this year, you know, what North Melbourne would have got for him. And I said probably a late second round sort of pick in terms of a trade. And I, at the time, I thought that was fair. Yes, he had done what he had done previously, but it had trailed off a little bit. And if a club could get him for that, they'd be laughing. But what a club gets now is a motivated Ben Brown. And I think that's really important to understand.
Yep. Look,
even when Barry Hall came from Sydney to the Bulldogs, and only played 1 year with Baz, but we had a motivated Barry Hall to, you know, obviously finish his football career in a really strong fashion, wanted to have a positive impact on himself as an individual and the way that he was possibly seen. Guys like Ben Brown, he's a proud performer. He's performed at his very best. We've seen that over the 3 years prior to that. And he was in a real sweet spot then. He might be past the sweet spot, but I think he's still got something to offer in terms of, you know, what he can do and the goals that he can kick between probably 30 and 40 a year for a football club. But he's going to be highly motivated to have an immediate impact. And I think that is priceless. So a club might only offer him a two-year deal, but they know within that first 12 months of that two-year deal, they're going to get a guy that's going to give absolutely everything. And if it works out, the second year flows. If it doesn't work out, well, you haven't overcommitted in terms of a four-year deal or anything like that. So I'd look at a short-term deal for a highly motivated guy that you'd think would want to have a huge impact again in this competition.
And Rammer will be listening, so he'll be taking notes, Jono. He'll be taking notes about what to do with Big Ben, and he'll be coming knocking.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say on this, Brad, is there a team in mind that you think will suit Ben?
Ooh, the Brisbane Lions wouldn't be too bad, would they?
Yeah, that's what I think.
In terms of that, you know, they've got McStay and Hipwood. McStay can flow in and out of the game a little bit. Hipwood's still an improving player in the competition. In terms of, yeah, the better teams that could possibly do with a player straight away, then maybe that's sort of what you look to. You go down sort of the bottom half of the ladder, see what happens with Fremantle and Hogan and Tabernar and that sort of matchup that they've got rolling at the moment. He could flow in quite well there. Outside of that, GWS potentially as an option for sure. It depends what happens with a couple of them. I know they've got Finlayson and a few others, but let's see what happens with Jeremy Cameron also.
You know what, Half? If he goes to the Brisbane Lions, he should do a deal with Peters. Well, this is what Rammer should do, a deal with Peters, and he could become the Paddle Pop Lion. He has a real Paddle Pop Lion look about him.
Oh, goodness me.
Yes.
How did
there's
we
the
get
promo.
There? There's the promo.
You know what we should do? You know what the best thing about the Paddle Pop back in the day? When you used to have the prizes on the stick. So
yes,
you used to have to match up the
correct
sticks.
Yep.
So maybe we could start to
spot
roll something
on
like that out,
yeah,
as well, Whitey,
spot
where
on
we get the,
yeah,
yes, you know, you're winning, I don't know what you're winning, a footy,
yeah,
or you're winning a car or who
knows.
34 centimetre
colour TV. Now you can need smartphones and barcodes and all this sort of stuff. We don't want that. We just want matching up of the sticks to get the
to get the
picture.
Prize.
Away we go.
Spot on,
Bryson. Seriously, growing up, that was elite. Well done from Peters and Paddle Pop, because I ate a truckload of them.
That's
up.
Brilliant. What a great memory. What a great memory, Johnson. That you've paid for yourself just with that all year. You've paid for yourself. Well done.
I want to know if anyone ever won anything, though, with that, any major prize with that particular competition, because I always got 2 out of 3. I could never match up the 3 sticks.
It's like the Monopoly at Macca's. You never got the full strip. Somebody that would have won something off the SMS, though, 0416905052. Let us know what you won. Before we get to the break and have a chat to Harry Taylor, Jono, Ross Lyon said something interesting last night about the Collingwood trip to WA. They're going to go and play the Eagles at Optus Stadium whenever that is next week.
Yep.
He made a really good point, really interesting point. I hadn't thought about it. What having to go through quarantine does might actually give them an advantage, because normally you go into the WA the day before, the time difference catches everyone out, you're caught out, they haven't acclimatised, so normally 55,000 degrees when you get there, and you're all sort of out of whack. This gives them a chance to acclimatise the conditions, get their body clocks right, and be. And I think they're going to get a chance to train at Optus Stadium as part of their quarantine protocols and rules. So this might be the best opportunity ever to play a WA team in a WA final, because they'll be there basically based at home for a week, acclimatised to the conditions.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good call from Ross, and well summed up as well, Harv. I think that's got some really strong positive merits too. The argument of going over and playing West Coast at Optus Stadium. Look, and plus they've got a West Coast team with a lot of players coming back from injury as well. So yeah, it's going to work either way for West Coast. They'll be able to get those players back, and it'd be a huge bonus for them. We understand that, but then there's still the question mark of if they hold up once the red hot contest comes about in terms of games, because they are coming off soft tissue a few of those players. So there will be question marks in and around that. So Collingwood's, if you're going to travel to Perth and they've got that opportunity now to do it with a bit of length, but also they're playing a team that there are a quality team, but there are some question marks over some of the star individuals within that lineup.
I think it's an interesting point from Roscoe, who's all over that last night. Gives you a chance to just become familiar with your surrounds and the time zones.
Especially if they're training at Optus. I think that's the key hub. If they're just out in Joondalup and stay there, different story. But if they can get in and train on the stadium, that's even more of a win.
That's good fun. It's good fun from Roscoe. He did a good job. We'll see how they go. We'll talk more about that in